All right, everybody, we are back with Two Dudes, One God Pod. This is going to be the second Paul Roberts episode, and y'all are in for a treat. In for a treat. Paul Roberts is an absolute blessing. Get ready. Sit back. Relax. If you've ever been married, if you are married, if you ever want to be married, this would be a great episode to listen to. Hope this really helps.
But I learned quick. And so I was taking notes. And did you will not believe how many couples that I've said they've come sit down in front of us over these last 20 years and saying we're getting a divorce. And I pulled the man aside and I said, you want to save this marriage? Yes. I said, you take her, sit her down with a pad and a pen, and you ask her, what are the top 10 things that you don't like about me?
What are some of the, I mean, you've been doing this for how many years now? 15 years, 20 years?
Just over 20.
Okay. So if you had to make a top five list of what are you seeing in your marriage coach? What are the top five things that are like the nail in the coffin that are
wrong with marriages? Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah. Well, of course, always the men are knuckleheads, uh-huh. You know, and just miss it, you know, and women in today's terms, I heard a deal today. It was beautiful. One of these political analysts, uh-huh. She was talking about, you know, that Trump speech that he made, that he was wanting to protect women. Mm. And she said, women want to be protected. Mm. That don't believe all the bull crap that they're saying about his, I want to protect women speech, you know? And she said, we want to be protected. Mm. And that's one of the things, you know, and it all boils down to that, those four things, you know, the fuse, F-U-S-E, remember we talked about that? Mm-hmm. The fear, the unforgiveness, that's the big thing. Mm. And shame.
My wife and I talk about that a lot. Mm. It's interesting because my wife's always like, hey, if you start feeling contempt for your partner, your husband, like, that's your problem.
That's right.
And I mean, she's hard on these women. And, you know, I really respect Melanie because, like, I don't think she had to ever get really hard with Michelle. But, like, I've heard stories, you know, that she'll tell people the truth. And I was lucky in my first marriage to have an actual licensed counselor, a marriage counselor through Graceworks, a woman named Jane Simmons. And she was real hard on me on the stuff I was wrong about. But, I mean, she leaned over and told my ex-wife directly. And, you know, she didn't want to come to counseling anymore after that, you know, after she got called out, my ex-wife didn't. But, you know, I think popular culture, society, you know, that there's a lot of lies. There's a lot of lies there, you know, what the left or, you know, whatever, what they want us to believe about women, what is a woman, all that stuff, you know. It's interesting that you say that commentator said, women do want to be protected. Oh, and I think that's true.
That's the number one thing I've learned through the years is women will seem to be, you know, tough, but all they're wanting is to be loved. Hmm. Whatever love looks like.
Well, and after that love woman, comes security. It's hard for them to feel it's loved all part if of they security. Don't have security. And so yeah. I think you're onto something. I think a woman will get real masculine and real rough and real bossy, and then the husband can end up chasing down this unsatisfiable list of problems if he doesn't lead. And part of leading is providing love and security. And mm-hmm. so that's just it. The whole love and respect deal, and like you said, is probably another podcast. But, like, that whole idea of love and respect.
It's amazing.
Was such a powerful deal. And to go through the class, even, you know, my wife, like, looking around, she's like, you know, day one, before we get going, all the women are hoot-to-doo, you know, and the dudes are like, why am I here? And, I mean, just an hour or two in, the women are looking at the ground. They're not smiling.
Because he hits them right off the bat, you know. And you got to realize that, you know, that women, girls, you're going to hear things in here that are going to shake your tree, because your husband doesn't give two beans about you loving him, really. He wants to be respected.
Absolutely.
And whenever you disrespect your husband, one of the first things they'll do is turn passive.
Stonewall.
And they'll stonewall.
Yep. And pull away. Because men, when they're disrespected, their natural instinct is to attack.
That's right.
And assert dominance. And we don't want to do that to the woman we love.
Well, we're afraid of what we'll do.
Right.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So we back off.
Right. We exit the situation.
That's right.
So the fuse.
Yeah,
fuse.
I like the fuse. I want to break that down.
Fear, unforgiveness.
Help us, Paul.
Shame.
Shame. Shame.
And the E. What's the E?
Ego. Dang.
You went through this course, bro.
Well, I didn't finish it.
That's why I didn't say that.
You couldn't remember either. It's okay. We'll edit this part out.
And you know what's funny? This is the biggest one. The E. Is the biggest one of the four. I've said that 1,000 times. That's why I know it is. It's expectations.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, look, expectations, I've always heard and been taught, expectations are just resentment on layaway.
You said that to me. That's exactly right.
And I think when you start having expectations, and here's something, Paul, I want to get your take on this. I believe that every woman has a picture from young little girl of how their wedding's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
And every woman has a picture.
It's called the Cinderella syndrome.
Yes.
Of how their husband... Who their husband is, how he is, how he looks,
what
how he
looks like,
everything. Yeah. They've got that picture. And I'm going to here to tell you, and husbands have a picture of how their wife is going to be, how she's going to look, how she's going to act, the kind of respect that
she's going to perform.
And men, I believe in society, are judged by other men by how their wife behaves, by how their wife treats them. And you can tell if a man is a good man and has a good marriage by how his wife treats him in public.
I agree.
And now you can have that picture, or you can have your partner.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a picture of how your husband's going to be, or you can love your husband. You can love the picture of who your wife could be, or you can love your wife. Mm-hmm. And when we get outside of that, we start having this expectation of the picture. That's when you start getting unforgiveness. That's when you start getting contempt, and man, it's a short trip for some people.
Well, and these expectations that they build, that they bring into the marriage with them, these men have got to realize that whenever they don't fulfill the women's expectations, then the fat hits the fan. So if we can get the wife to realize, because the wives are worse about this than the husbands, if we can get the wives to realize that it's your expectations that are causing you to feel the way you are, and he will deliver a lot more if you don't expect him to be a certain way. See, that's what they do. They bring in this certain way they want their husband to be, and if he's not that way, generally what do they do?
Flees, checks out.
No, they try to change.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, and I think men have known this for a long time. We just lower our expectations and then we get married, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because the way that matchmaking is backwards for us. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, you know,
we're lower value when we're young, and we're higher value when we're old, and they're higher value when they're young and they're virgins and so on, you know?
Well, whenever we get to the expectations, like in our marriage coaching, before it's over, before the 6 hours are over, we have both the couples lay down all of their expectations. And if you remember, even in the ceremony, I said that you cannot enter into this marriage with expectations of how your husband's going to be or how your wife's going to be. because they'll never fulfill that, ever. And you've got to let all that go and let each other be who God created you to be and not who you want them to be.
Well, and I said in our previous episode that, you know, my life straightened out a lot when I started asking God, what do you want me to do? What do you want for me? Show me. Show me. Not, God, if this could just happen this way, then things would work out better, and I think people would really just see your power and your providence if all these things worked out the way I want them to work out, you know? So I think I've been pretty lucky. My wife came into our relationship with an understanding of, in her mind, if there's something about this guy that I don't like right now, but I'm like, it could get better, then this isn't going to work. So, like, she had already, I'm assuming, I was real honest. I was brutally honest. I had a list of the things that I wanted in a wife, and I had a list of all of my character defects and all of my sin. And I showed it to her when we were just dating. And I said, like, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm pretty idealistic, and I want a lot, but I am broken. I'm not good. I've done a lot of bad things, and I've made some bad decisions, and I've got some stuff that I'm working on. And I think that was refreshing. She couldn't believe it. She was like, she was telling her friends, like, well, he showed me a list of all the things that were wrong with him, you know?
He was older.
Yeah.
Well, older men have a tendency to be more honest than younger guys, because whenever I was 19 years old and met that beautiful woman at the table, oh my gosh, I was starstruck.
Well, we don't know what we don't know. You know,
exactly right.
And I banged my head against the wall a bunch.
That's right.
And I realized, like, hey, bait and switch isn't going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
So you and Melanie have not only been doing marital coaching, y'all have dealt with some of the roughest, most vile cases, just that just make you sick, make you cry in the car on the way home stuff. I know that y'all have seen some of the worst situations, but, you know, you never get the positive without the dark. So you've also seen some terrible things that have been flipped. And, I mean, I know some of the stories. I sat and spar with you, and I've heard some of the guys. I've seen the relationships restored. I've seen evidence of God's awesome power that's supernatural, for sure, because I know situations that I'm like, that would never – we wouldn't be married. There's no way.
Do you know that, you know, of course, in our culture, especially the last 30 years, if people are married and one of them strays and has an affair and goes out, what's the first thing that the other partner would do?
The same thing.
Well, that's retaliation.
Got it.
Divorce.
Got it.
Go straight into divorce. Wouldn't even consider forgiveness.
Yeah.
So unforgiveness is the rule of thumb in that. Some of the most powerful marriages that Melanie and I see today are the ones that had infidelity in them. And it was all forgiven.
Wow.
But do they have a joint Facebook page now?
Yes, they do. A lot of them.
Yeah.
See, I don't know.
Is that forgiveness, though?
Have you really forgiven them if they have a flip phone?
Well, okay.
No, I think because a lot of the men will venture out whenever they don't feel satisfied sexually at home, and so the first thing they do is start looking at porn, and that's where the devil hooks them. And remember, you know, you got to remember, we've got an enemy.
Absolutely.
And your wife ain't your enemy.
Right. Yeah.
It's the principalities and powers and rulers of the darkness of this world and spiritual wickedness in high places. That's your enemy.
Yeah.
And he's going to do whatever you can do. And that's why you need to read that book by Jonathan Cahn. That's what's happening right now in our country.
Jonathan Cahn.
What's the name of that book again?
The Return of the Gods.
Okay.
Little G.
That's a little pug right there for some good reading material.
Oh, boy. That book will send shivers down your timber. The other book that you guys need to read is by Eric Metaxas.
Metaxas.
Metaxas. And it's the newest latest greatest thing, and he has written a book about the church and what we are going through here in America, and he compares in the book to what to Nazi Germany. Whoa. And how America is in the same place that Nazi Germany was in 1933.
Wow.
And because the church in Germany did not stand up, and they ended up controlling the church in Germany, and a lot of the people that were trying to stand up to them, there was only a few pastors that actually said, you know, you can't do this, and they ended up
concentration camps.
Well, are dead.
Yeah,
you know. Hitler took the brown shirts, and if somebody was against him one day, the next morning there'd be an article in the paper, so-and-so was murdered during the night. Well, wow. It was Hitler's guys that did it.
Yeah.
That's how he got control.
Wow.
You're going to see that, but unless we get a hold of it. But Eric Metaxas. Get his book. It's phenomenal. I listened to it in tractor mowing pasture.
A lot of good times in that. Can we keep unpacking the fuse?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, 100%. I was really liking that. I'm single. I'm like, I've been divorced.
You may be the smartest man in the room.
I don't know about that. but like, it's really good what you're on about the fuse. I've never heard that.
And this is the way we talk about fuse. Mm. And Brian's the one that taught me this, Brian Childers. Anyway, every marriage, and this is where Melanie and I have discovered, every marriage that we find that's headed for the rocks has got all four elements working in it of fuse. Fear, unforgiveness, shame, and expectations. And if they don't deal with those four, then it'll be over. So, all four of them.
Yeah. So you can't just deal with the fear and not deal with the unforgiveness, because then that ends up just festering even more. Mm-hmm. The unforgiveness takes place of the fear and the shame, and you can't do like just two. You have to do all four of them.
Well, the interesting thing about this acronym is it's not spelled out chronologically. Mm-hmm. So the expectations are the beginning.
Oh yeah, that's the big thing.
You know.
Most of the time, they bring that into the marriage.
Yeah, yeah. Expectations come into the marriage, and then there's fear, and then there's unforgiveness, you know. And
I agree, like, you can really see a lot of those expectations coming in. I mean, like you said, talking about the Cinderella syndrome, like, the woman's got this perfect wedding that's in mind, and then they even end up getting that perfect wedding, and then next thing you know, things aren't going well at home because she's still stuck in that wedding mode.
The expectations.
Yes.
Well, the problem with the Cinderella thing is Cinderella is a Disney story. And in Disney stories, it's like it ends with a happily ever after. We don't ever get the, like, how did that happen? We just get they had the perfect wedding. The prince saved the day. Mm-hmm. The princess got the prince. But, like, we don't ever see them, like, 3 years later with two kids in marriage counseling. You know what I mean? Like,
I think Disney has done more damage for marriage than anything else.
But don't forget, John Eldridge taught me this. That the reason why those stories are so powerful in to women and in some of the men is because it's born in their heart. The heart of every woman wants to have the perfect.
Yeah.
And she wants to be rescued by the prince that comes in on the white stallion, and all women want that.
Yeah,
and,
that's another book, Wild at Heart, if you haven't read
definitely.
That.
Yeah.
Ladies and men, both need to read that one.
Yeah, Melanie says that Wild at Heart changed her life when she read it. And it's about men.
Yeah.
It's about what makes a man come to life. And well, and you know, y'all didn't invite me here to talk about marriage. but I have an endless supply of information for that. And you know, just learned so much through the years, through the trial and error, about what it takes to have a good marriage. And you know, like so many people, I learned the hard way that, you know, when our marriage was, we thought it was over. And you got to realize it didn't take a week or a month or 2 months to put our marriage back together. It took a year, a good solid year, before we were ever intimate in any way. And it was a tragic time, and I had to change my life. Really did. The boot scooting. Man, we found a place in Rockwall, Texas. It was called, what was that called? It's still there. It's a cowboy, you know, dance hall in Rockwall. And I'll think of it in a minute. But anyway, it's they had a you could every Thursday night they had ribs all you could eat, and if you ate the ribs, you got free dance lessons. And it was the greatest thing ever. We danced around that old place. She was shocked. She could not believe that I was willing to do that, because you had to go to the club to really dance. Well, as a youth pastor, do you really want to be seen in a club? You know? Well, guess what? It was fine. It was nobody fine. Ever said a word.
Thursday nights worked just fine.
Yeah, sir. Yeah. Of course, we drove 50 miles to get there. The odds of somebody being there that I knew from church were like slim and none, you know?
Worth every mile.
Yeah, it really was.
So, you know, I guess talking about that intimacy, regaining that trust, I mean, you said that y'all started dancing on Thursday nights. What was some other things that, y'all kind of implemented in, learning her language to understand her?
Well, it was huge, really. The transformation that God led me through was Melanie had been, she had joined a group of women that were in the horseback riding, and they were called the Saddlebags. And there were North Bags and South Bags, and or North Bags and East Bags. That's what it was. And so Melanie got into this group, and they would take weekends, and they'd go camping at some place, and they'd ride horses all weekend, and they would ride every Thursday. And so whenever the fat hit the fan, it dawned on me that I was not participating in the thing that Melanie loved the most, and that was horses. So I entered into it, and it pissed her off.
Oh,
really did.
Because you got good at it, didn't you?
I was already good at
it. Dang right you was.
I was born. I told you I was five years old.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, the reason it made her mad, because we were in the middle of this, you know, bad time, is that she saw her friends liked me a lot.
Well, they didn't have unforgiveness or expectations.
Exactly.
They didn't have fear.
And that's right.
Tied to you.
Tied to me.
Wow.
And so, I'm a history buff. I know a lot about history because I've studied it, and they were fascinated at how much about history I knew. These women and their husbands. Some of the husbands were along because we were the saddle bums. We weren't the bags, we were the bums. And I fit that bill perfectly. And so we started traveling. So, I mean, we just got back Sunday from a 10-day ride. We still go. We go. Everything's got bigger and better. You know, the trailers are bigger now, and they
got a nice trailer.
Yeah, living quarters. And you go and you set up and you ride for – we were gone for 9 days, and we rode 7 of those days. And so now she's great with me being there. As a matter of fact, most of the time we just ride just me and her. Sometimes we ride with groups, but that's not awesome. That often. So it's been a crazy transformation.
And was that a case where, I mean, was there anything else, like, besides the horseback riding and the dancing? I mean, obviously, did y'all, like, were y'all reading on the daily together? Were y'all praying together?
Oh, well, now, okay, so if you want to get into that conversation.
Oh, yeah, I want that deep.
There's one thing, and I've told this guy this 100 times. There's one thing that men can do that will make all the difference in their marriage, And that's praying with their wife every night before they go to bed, before they go to sleep.
They even told me, like, if you don't want to be with her, then definitely don't pray with her or for her.
I learned that as a youth pastor.
Wow.
Told these high school girls, these teenagers, don't enter into a relationship with a guy and start dating a guy and then allow him to pray for you, because you'll be hooked.
Yeah.
And they would look at me like a calf staring at a new gate. What are you talking about? I'm going, that's every woman's desire, is to have a man that will pray for her.
Mm.
And sure enough, it was true.
Mm.
It's been true ever since. And whenever we start working with marriages that are having struggles, every one of them, the husband is not praying with his wife.
Mm.
Total. It's complete. Never had one that was having trouble that the husband was praying with the wife.
Hmm.
That's probably what was wrong with yours.
Probably, yeah. I won't say no to that. I won't disagree. You know, and that's a very difficult thing for men, especially, you know, whenever you come to an understanding that your wife has expectations that aren't even necessarily about praying or anything, or you're not aware of her mm-hmm. expectations that she wants you to pray. And even whenever you
she do, doesn't know she wants to you to pray for
her. Right. But even whenever you do know that she wants you to pray for her, that's daunting thing
mm-hmm.
coming before a holy God and bringing your wife before her, but also, like, we're supposed to come boldly before the throne. Yeah.
And the thing about that prayer, you know, you got kids, so you go pray with them at night. You tuck them into bed. I prayed every night, told them a story and all that, but I didn't do that with Melanie.
Hmm.
So whenever I started doing it, started praying for her at night, and then I realized the first thing in the morning that I needed to be on my face in front of God saying, what's next?
Right.
What do I do now? You know, and I would get on my knees in my living room every morning and just pray my guts out. And she won't mind me telling you this. She started having dreams. God started giving her dreams.
Mm.
And some of those dreams were not good about what was going to happen to her. As she continued down the path. Now, it wasn't she was going to die or nothing, but it was not going to be good. And she began, and she had a couple of people say something to her. And so she stopped it. She never filed for divorce or nothing. We never did. Never went. We went to counseling once. Because she didn't want any part of that.
Mm.
Now, that may have been twice. We do went twice.
So she didn't want any part of
The counseling.
Of the counseling? Wow, that's different. You don't hear that too often.
Well, she was done.
Oh, yeah. She was out. She was out of that. Okay, that makes sense. Kind of like, I guess going back to the expectations deal, like, and that, like, whenever men have that understanding about the expectations, then if you're dealing with the unforgiveness, you're definitely not going to be coming before God, especially Melanie, when you're not forgiving yourself.
Well, and that's the thing that Melanie and I have found, is that the women start riding the unforgiveness horse, and they don't want to get off of it because they know in the back of their mind, if they forgive this man for whatever he's done and not being who she expected him to be is the main one, if she forgives him, then slate's clean, brother.
Yep. Gets rid of fear.
Well, and so think about shame for a second and how horrible shame is.
Certainly.
Because it doesn't have to be in your marriage that you have the shame.
Absolutely.
It can just be in some and shame comes from Satan making you shameful for your past wrongs, your past sins, whatever it is, and he continues to remind you constantly of your sin. And that's where the shame is. So shame is not our friend. Shame is evil. Guilt, on the other hand, is one of our best friends, because if you feel guilty about something you've done, then that is the same as what? Conviction. So that's God convicting you of your wrongs, and you take that to the feet of Jesus, ask his forgiveness, and then the shame will go away.
Well, and you can become calloused to guilt and shame.
So
you can believe and be saved and get so comfortable in your sin that it doesn't bother you. And I think that's maybe pretty close to where I was when I started coming to Spar. I was just so covered up in the crud of sin.
You were blinded by your sin. And you couldn't see the thing that I always went on. Every time we had spar, I drove home thinking about it.
I can imagine.
Stinking way. Will I ever be able to help him? You know, I want to help him because I like him. But the thing that you've got to be willing to change and let the Lord lead you in that change in order to move away from sin.
And I think also, like, having that mentality of changing and allowing the Holy Spirit to work within you. You know, there's a scripture in the Old Testament that says that I will remove the heart of stone and I'll replace it with the heart of flesh.
Absolutely.
And that's something that people tend to forget, like whenever you said about we get numb to our sin, we get calloused, we get hardened. Our hearts hardened over towards our sin. And whenever we are able to come to God and say, hey, I need you to take this from me and really point out the blind spots of where my sin is hardening over, I think that's a part of the Christian life that we're always supposed to be doing, is come to him and saying, God, I'm tired of these things. And you know, we talked about in one of the podcasts where the wrestle with God, that's a part of the wrestle also, is coming to him and saying, hey, I have something that I don't like about me. I've had somebody expose it, whether it be my wife, whether it be my brother, parent, whatever. At the end of the day, God is the one who is able and willing to change those things and put that heart of flesh if you will just reach out to him and really get to know him.
I mean, I'd take that even a step further and say that a lot, you know, we talk about masks, you know, and a lot of us wear the mask of I'm working on myself and I want to be like, step away from yourself. put yourself down and step away. Because it's not my business. And sometimes I may think that I have a certain thing that I need to work on. But you nailed it. What I need to do is go to God and go, what is it that I need to work on? And what is it that you need to work on? You know? Like, hey, God, show me what it is that I can do. I have a shovel. If I need the hole, like, I'm here with a shovel. But how can you help lead me? I'm trying to follow you. And so, you know, look, I said it before. Like, I go to 12-step meetings, and, you know, they were real clear that you needed to admit to God, to yourself, and another human being the exact nature of your wrongs. That's who you hurt and why. That's not what you did. It's not I cheated on my wife or I got real drunk and killed somebody in a car wreck. It's I'm a selfish, self-centered, self-serving person.
Yep.
You know, it's who you hurt and why. So when we talk about Freedom Weekend or boot camp, you know, these are things that we can get into. But you lay that before God and go, hey, I don't have the power. You do, God. You have the power. Jesus, help me. Help me with this. I'm losing this battle. And that's the difference between wrestling with God. Like, are you in the fight or are you just fighting, you know?
Or are you running?
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, like run, fight, hide or whatever. Like, I don't want to stick my head in the sand. And I don't want to be like, hey, God, here's this problem. Fix it for me. But some problems we have as humans, we need supernatural power to fix. And I think the battle with sin is a great example of that. And, you know, I mean, that's where I'm at with it. In my life, there's been some things that there's not a thing I could have done or thought or learned or whatever Some of it's just suiting up and showing up and going, hey, God, I'm here. Mold me. Mm. You know, like, I need your power here. So I might be a little more childlike on the faith side, but I had to get real honest that, like, I don't believe in the Bible. I don't believe in Jesus or God because of the Bible. You know, I think that story began before somebody put the books together, you know. And so for me, Jesus is real and God's real. But the miracles that they talk about in the New Testament were performed, you know, by God in his name, not by people. So, like, the disciples weren't just healing people.
Right.
God was, you know. And so I have to look at that in my own life. Like, hey, I'm not healing myself. Like, I can very well stop drinking. I can drive my family to church on Sunday, but I don't need to start thinking that I'm doing all this stuff. It's God. So God does all this stuff. He only works on people with the things they have. He never focuses on what you don't have, and he does all things. He works out all things for his glory, you know? And so I think, man, we get twisted in the church culture, and I think we have a pretty healthy church here. You know, but like maybe the Big C Church, we start thinking like, well, a hurricane hit Florida, you know, and then you see people on the news. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Or you'll see, you know, you'll see somebody on the news. They'll be like, man, my neighbor lost everything, but my house didn't get water. And I'm like, oh, so God loves you, you know? So we get things kind of confused.
Well, and that's part of the whole redemption story is people get confused about what redemption, about how God redeems things. And he redeemed us through his blood. He redeemed us through his death. But that's our heart and our soul that where we can live in heaven. But how does he redeem other things in our life?
Right.
And it's that you were talking about. So something happens in our lives, and it's a negative. And what the first thing that we do if we're we even believe in God, we blame God for it. God, why did you allow this to happen? Well, but we don't want to admit that 6 months ago we were in looking at porn, we were whatever, you know, the sin was, and because of that it started to snowball rolling down the hill
and gets
to the
worse
point.
And worse and just builds up,
and God had nothing to do with any of it,
right?
And you got to look back at the Garden of Eden when you think about sin and the results of sin in our lives. So could God have stepped in and stopped Eve from taking that fruit?
Certainly.
Well, not if he was going to maintain free will.
That's the point. But could he have stepped in?
Sure, absolutely.
Absolutely. He could have just wiped her out and said, okay, Adam, we'll try this again. I'll get you another one, you know? He let it happen. And what were the results of it? Had nothing to do with God, had everything to do with their sin.
Yes.
And that's the story that I hear all the time from people that have tragedy in their life, is the first thing they do is they want to blame God. And he had nothing to do with it.
And I think people also forget that the same God who kicked them out of the garden is the same God that clothed them.
That's right.
It's the same God that told them these are, and you know, we see an unfolding of the scripture, of the revealing in scripture through the bloodline of Seth and their children and everything like that. And God really just shows up in so many ways, and you see a culture being kind of plucked out and set apart, if you will, amongst all the other cultures. And we have a tendency to forget that the world is fallen, and we tend to focus on, oh, well, yeah, the Bible was cool and all, but man, when you look at the context of the culture surrounding Israel and the things that they were experiencing, I mean, you have to see the goodness of God really coming out and being a prescription. Everything that God just unfolded to the people as a prescription to sin, as a prevention to sin, and all these things that they did, we tend to forget about all that. And at, like what you said with redemption, God redeems every situation.
And let him redeem your past. That's the thing. You got to let God redeem your past. And whenever he redeems something, he gives it back to you as a gift.
Oh, yes.
So whenever you screw up something in your life, give it to the Lord. He redeems it, puts a bow around it, and says, here, give this to somebody else. Because I redeemed that for you. And it makes for a powerful thing, because that's whenever your story will cause redemption in somebody else's life. Wow. God doesn't condemn you because you did it. He redeems it.
Yeah, so in the reparation of your marriage, God gave you and Melanie this unique opportunity to then go forward and bear fruit of,
that's right,
of solving and helping, you know, right, fix marriages for who knows how many people. Because yeah, you give people tools that they can then turn and disciple people with as well.
Yeah, and we were doing marriage work already. It started back in like 2002, 2003. We'd run into couples that needed help. Our marriage was being restored. So this is what we did. This is what we found. This is what, you know, we were doing that. And then we ran into Love and Respect book. Mm-hmm. And that set our entire...
Was that a little bit like, oh, somebody wrote down what we stumbled upon? Because, you know, I sat through that class and I thought, wow, I've never heard it said this way, but I didn't find myself surprised by the things in it. But it was like the order and the structure of it made it more powerful. Because you can just have knowledge, but that's not the same thing as wisdom. So there's a lot of wisdom in that Love and Respect book, and then the class that goes along with it that y'all put on.
And the book is sold, I think it's up to 1.5 million copies now. But the book isn't near as good as the videos.
Really?
Wow. That's what we found. Because he's like a machine when he's up there. He's so funny. Mm-hmm. It's all fantastic.
It becomes more of an experience.
Yeah, and I have never heard anything any better.
Paul, would you recommend that a single man go through the class?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we would make room for that. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think that there's some wisdom that I've stumbled upon is you don't become a husband or a wife when you get married. Mm-hmm. You live like a husband or live like a wife, and then you get married. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that, like, if there's a single guy or girl listening to this, you know, to touch on kind of my topic on the cigars that I talked about in the last episode, like if there's something you want in your life, like you better learn as much as you can about it. You know, you better make that your goal to learn about it. You want a good marriage and you're not married, maybe go to a Love and Respect class. Maybe read a book, you know?
Yeah.
But you want to read a book or go to a class that's good. You don't want to get the wrong information.
Yeah.
You know?
No, and there's so many marriage things that have been written over the last 50 years that are no good. I mean,
I agree.
You can't live it. You can't do it.
I kind of like that advice from the, what is it? It was like the 1950s, and it's like, when your husband comes home, have a meal prepared and don't ask him any questions, you know? Like, what?
Father knows best.
So y'all started out in music, and then it was children, and then it was youth, and then it was marriage, and I know that you do an awful lot of discipleship with just men, and so can you talk a little bit about that, Paul? Like, what are you doing now, and what's in the future? What's coming up? I know you said that earlier we were just talking, and you said that you and Melanie have kind of slowed down, and is that because things are getting better for marriages, or is there another couple that's kind of stepped in this geographical location that's kind of doing some of that? And I guess specifically, I know this is a long question, but like, what are you doing with men? Where are you putting you're still involved with freedom trainings and you're doing boot camps and what's going on?
We've got new ones. We've got new cities opening up.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a big group now in Dallas. We've got one in Florida. We've got one in Alabama, and they're started up, and they're doing boot camps. And so we've allowed that to just happen, you know. And at first it kind of ticked me off whenever people were taking our material and putting on their own boot camps. And now I don't care. It don't matter. So whatever the Lord wants to do with it is fine with us. And, you know, it took it years to develop, but we haven't changed anything in years now. And it just works so well, the whole men's boot camp idea. It's all these different trainings that Brian and I went to, and it's all these different things that we came up with from here and from there. And finally, whenever it came together, it was just, as you know, it just worked so well, you know. But it's still not perfect. We've added some things in the last 4 or 5 years, but we didn't change anything. We just added things.
Right.
What would you say to a man that is maybe reluctant about getting into, like, going to a weekend of like a Freedom Weekend or something, or somebody, or maybe a woman who is just now realizing that she's had expectations that are too strong for a man? Those might be two different questions, but I think that maybe you can answer them in the similar fashion.
Well, if a man is reluctant to get involved in a boot camp or Freedom Weekend that y'all have here, it's because of the fear. Because he doesn't want to change. That's the biggest problem, is we know we have issues, but we're afraid of the change. And so you've just got to trust the Lord in that he's going to take care of you, and that these bunch of knucklehead men aren't going to lead you down a wrong path.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about the boot camps and the Freedom Weekend and all that we've put together, is totally about Jesus.
Yeah.
That's not about us.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've been in a few different programs that were secular, and I found it was so empty, because then you're just depending on yourself. And yes, there is an aspect of men are supposed to be depending on themselves and supposed to be providing for their families and everything. But also, if you end up waking up and you're alone, and you realize that you've put your faith entirely in your spouse or your kids or your job or any of these things, you can find pretty quick that you'll wake up very empty. And I've seen a lot of men that are burned out, not just from the family life, but from depending on themselves, and they have no refuge.
Well, you know, it's quite clear in Scripture that pride is, it's a terrible thing. And whenever men are prideful and we believe that we've arrived in life, that's whenever we're headed for the cliff.
Yeah.
And what that looks like is feeling good, looking good, being right, and being in control. Those are the four faces of pride.
I think that's the one thing that we've done that we might have changed about boot camp over the last 2 or 3 years, is we've added to the team tee up, because men that do this work and they've done it for a while and they think they're good at it, one of the biggest problems we have is they're no longer humble. And so I wrote a tee up for Friday night for boot camp for the team that's heavy on the fact that this is not about you.
Yes.
Well, that's one of my favorite things about all of this, is like, hey, this isn't for you. This wasn't designed for you.
This is all about Jesus. and a man that wants freedom. And that was the one word that God gave me coming over here that I haven't said yet.
Okay.
Is what does freedom really mean in the Lord? And you got to go to Galatians 5.
Yeah.
Whenever he says, Jesus came to bring us freedom.
Yeah.
So what is freedom for? Why do we do boot camps? Why do we want men to walk in freedom?
For Jesus.
We want them to walk in freedom from a life of sin and the results of sin in their life.
Mm. And the only way that's achieved is in Jesus.
That's right.
And understanding who he is.
Through the blood of Christ.
Yeah.
Shed on the cross.
Yeah.
You got to totally put your heart and your life and your trust in him. And you can't do this. And that's why we stress so much that you are no better than that man sitting beside you in these trainings. You are no better.
Absolutely.
Even though you got more knowledge, that didn't make you any better. Because what do? Whenever we go to the mirror?
Yeah.
Mm. You know, that's an interesting thing to bring up, because, you know, a head full of knowledge and a present situation full of sin is a pretty tough spot to be in. And I think we find people, you know, you have this cathartic experience, you know, if you go through one of these weekends. And I hope that anybody listening that has not been through will go through one. I don't care where you go.
Anywhere. Yeah.
Get to it.
That God is calling you to go somewhere.
Run,
too.
Sign up. If there's a sign up, do it. If you're worried about money or whatever, I'm sure something can be done.
Well, whenever Melanie and I started down our road of destruction in our marriage, and he began to reveal to both of us, her just as much me, the things that led up to that, there's not a week that goes by that we don't use what we learn because of our problems in order to help somebody else. And that's what the Lord, that's what we talk about, redemption. He wants to redeem your past and make it a gift. And that's what he did for us. He truly did. And our marriage is not perfect because we're still imperfect people.
Right.
But we have a great marriage. You know, we just had our first great-grandchild.
Wow.
She's a month old.
Oh.
Month and 1 week. And I'm too young to have a great-grandchild. That's not true. But anyway, I want to think so.
Yeah.
But Melanie and I now have, we've, you know, totally retired. We have learned traveling with just her and me is a good thing. And we have met some of them in our travels over the last few years. We have met some of the greatest Christian folks. And it's just encouraged me that, and they're from places like Portland, Oregon, as Christian people.
You know, I was in Portland, Oregon. I spent a few days this summer. It was pretty normal. I just want to say. Like, yeah.
Except downtown.
I mean, even downtown. Like, downtown Dallas is just as nuts.
Yeah,
boy, you're not kidding. But like, the news will have you think that, like, there's naked people walking down the street and everybody has a pride flag. And, like, that wasn't my experience with Portland.
I have a lot of friends. You know, our main manufacturing company that we sold, their equipment still do. My son-in-law owns the business now, but was in Portland. And I've been to Portland 100 times for conventions and to the factory and all that stuff. And the greatest place to go was downtown. Yeah. But those guys that still live and work there, they don't go downtown anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a sad deal. It's beautiful downtown Portland. Mm. Great. Yeah. So the main thing that I was wanting to bring to this was, what did freedom for you and me cost, and how do we plug into it?
Yeah, buddy.
And redemption.
Well,
through,
I mean,
the cross.
How many men have we seen, like, well, I just can't forgive myself.
Oh,
I just can't forgive myself. And I just want to be like,
every week.
So Jesus on the cross wasn't enough. You know, you're that big and important and special that you just, Jesus can forgive everybody else.
Except for.
And he can even forgive you. But you can't forgive you? How arrogant. How egotistical.
And so many of the women that we talk to are that have messed up. You know, they can't. They just don't think they can ever be forgiven. This is what we discovered when we first started working with young people years ago. Whenever a girl gives herself away sexually, she looks at herself as messed up. Even if it's just been one time. And so what do they do?
Even if it wasn't her choice.
Exactly.
Especially if it wasn't her choice.
Yeah. They feel like they're damaged goods. And so what does it matter? I'm damaged goods anyway.
Right.
And men have the same thing. Like, hey, I'm going to quit smoking. I'm going to quit drinking. And then accidentally you have a drink and then you get drunk. You're like, well, I might as well get hammered.
That's right.
Right.
What's the point? Yeah.
That's a pretty, I think everybody can understand that. I have a question for you. Because I want to say, to be clear, I'm not a counselor.
Neither am I.
I was, you know, I went to school for it, and I functioned as one for a while. But all of the clients that I had that had had an abortion were haunted by it.
Absolutely.
No matter what side of the political aisle they were on.
Even if they didn't want to admit it.
Yes. Well, in the context that I was dealing with them, you know, they were freely admitting it at that point. They wanted help, you know. And I think that's real similar to the sexual promiscuity thing. And, you know, hell, I guess they go together. They have to. You know, they do. Can't get a baby without it. It's not like a surprise with how you get pregnant. So what have you seen? You know, have you seen any redemption in as far as that goes? I mean, have you and Melanie dealt with people and seen some healing there? And where would you point a young woman or – I guess a woman old enough to do it, you know, where would you point them, you know, to get started on?
See, that's the redemption road is because they've got to allow the Lord to redeem it where they can get over the shame of it. Because that's what carries them down is the shame. So they've got to go find somebody that they can talk to about it and sit down and just tell them the ugly truth, and then that someone lead them into redemption.
So,
the where, that'd be difficult.
Well, I mean, so this even affects men. So, like, I'm going to be honest, this is pretty, I don't really want to share this, but I'm going to do it. So, like, I dated a girl in my early 20s and really believed that she was the one. And, you know, I hadn't talked to God about it or anything, you know, but, like, we've been together for a couple of years. And things kind of, I just noticed something wasn't right. Things were getting weird. And I confronted her, and she said that she had an abortion, and it was mine. And she did it for us. And it destroyed me. I felt so shameful and dirty and not it, I don't think there's words that I understand that I can use to explain the responsibility that I felt for that death, you know, because I'm going to say it. I think that the three of us for sure agree that all life is valuable and all life comes from God. And, so I'm 100% like, you know, I'm like, you get raped by your dad, abortion's off the table, my opinion. You know, because it's life. I don't understand. I had a professor at TJC that was like, I don't know, like a horse breeder or something, you know, and it was like microbiology. I don't know what class it was, some kind of biology class. And he was like, you know, life begins. Hell, I don't know. It was sometime long enough later that you could have an abortion. And I raised my hand. I'm like, hey, bud. But I thought biology was the study of life and life began at cell division. So, like, I don't really understand. And, and you know, I barely passed that class, you know. And I was no apologist, you know. Like, I didn't have a whole bunch of business. I was just genuinely confused at how it's okay to kill a baby. I don't understand that. It's not.
It's not okay.
It's and so
that's why they're haunted by it.
I agree. And so I think right now in the political climate that we're in, even in the Big C Church, there's some murkiness and some confusion about this deal. And I think it's important. I think, you know, and maybe we should get a guest on that knows more about this kind of an issue and talk to them. But, you know, I just wanted to get your take on that. And do you have maybe a success story of somebody that got some redemption in that? I mean, you don't have to use names or tell a specific story, but.
Well, there's an organization here in Tyler called CARE, C-A-R-E.
Mm-hmm.
And it's after abortion care. And they're a very strong organization. We have friends that are in there.
Wow.
So you can look it up, CARE, C-A-R-E. And they have a great chapter right here in Tyler, Texas. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. And they care for women that have been through abortions, and they've got a bunch of them.
Do they also, what if somebody who comes along and they were thinking about getting an abortion and then they change their mind type thing, and so they have a branch for that
sticky,
as well?
That's a sticky subject, you know. It gets a bad light. I think there's tons of women that find out they're pregnant that could benefit from that. But I guess more specifically, my question is, what about the guys? You know?
Yeah.
There was nobody for me to talk to about that. And it was done. It had happened months in the past. And I mean, hell, I had tools. I had, you know, a sponsor. I had, you know, I could have gone to church. There was a lot of things I could have done. But, like, it's a little bit like admitting that I was the one that was abused by my wife or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's a pretty unpopular. That's why I didn't really want to bring this up. And then I feel like if I didn't want to do it, then it needs to be done.
Well, CARE, that organization, is like AA for alcoholics.
Got it.
It's the same kind of deal. Okay. So men, they've got a ministry. They've got a side of them that help the man just as much as they help the woman.
Wow.
We might need to reach out to them.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely.
Well, I know people that are very involved. So okay. If you ever want to know, I can give you names. That'd be great. You could get them in here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Paul, thank you so much. This has been a wonderful session. Like we have thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm so glad you talked about the Fuse deal. Like I'm going to be listening to this podcast to you again, because like you put so much out there. And I think that it's such a subject that people aren't willing to be vulnerable with. And I think that the reality that people don't tend to understand is that our vulnerability can really be our superpower, and something that really you allow healing to take place whenever you talk about those vulnerable things. So
in God's hands.
Yes.
In
God's hands. Yes, absolutely.
If you just go around saying all the bad stuff you did, it's spreading the mess.
Right.
And it can't become a message until God redeems it. You know?
That's right.
So you've got to do the work, and you've got to allow him the space. Get your ego down, get humble enough to allow him to do it.
Then it becomes a gift.
Certainly.
That
certainly.
You can give to other people.
And what a gift Paul Roberts has
for
been.
For real, dude. And I loved your story, like, at the beginning. Like, I learned so much about you, dude. Like, I had no idea. Like, this guy.
You'll end up cutting most of that out.
No.
Sure.
No, we're going to keep all of it. This has been Two Dudes, One God podcast. And we're signing off. And prepare yourself for the week, and prepare yourself for next week's episode. Thank you all for listening.
All right. God bless.